Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia? Solartopia, Solartopia.
Garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
oh yeah,
you know,
we started to burn too many things we found. That's the wonderful Dara Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, the Solartopia song. We are back for another hour, and we're going to be digging into the general theft, the upcoming theft of the 2018 election. I know so many people are counting in their hearts to have the Democrats take over the Congress and get rid of this horrible nightmare that's called Donald Trump. Everybody's counting on the idea that we're going to be able to mount a progressive attack on the whole of the GOP, grand old party here. But I got to tell you something. It's looking pretty rough, and it doesn't have to do with the public sentiment. Public sentiment is with us. Trump's ratings are down, and, well, they're low. Anyway, we'll put it that way. He keeps the Republicans keep nominating these outright fascists. There's just been a terrible, terrible guy nominated for, I think, Senate in Virginia. Outright Nazis being put into the Republican Party. The Republican Party has become basically a fascist party. I mean, it's in lockstep with Trump. People who don't bow down to Trump are being purged from the party, basically. But it all depends on having a reliable vote count in 2018. And there are God knows how many ways that the Republicans are going after. Well, let me go through a few. They have rigged voting machines. And John Brakey's going to be talking about that with us. John, you on?
I certainly am.
All right. Let me go through the litany with them. Susie and Dorothy Reich, are you on with us? Dorothy? Not with us yet. And Susie Shannon, you're with us.
I'm here. Hi, Harvey.
Good, good. We have a member of the Democratic National Committee, Susie Shannon, with us. And we have John Brakey, who is a great campaigner on voting machines. Let me run through, and then at the half hour, we're going to be joined by Bob Fitrakis, who's going to talk to us about this recent court decision from Ohio. But let me go through the litany here of some of the ways that the Republicans are already stealing.
You didn't mention me, so can I hang up?
Dorothy, hello, Dorothy. Are you there?
Yeah.
Dorothy Reich? You sound like you're in a tunnel. You're talking through a tin horn. But anyway, let me go through.
I can't hear you well either, Tom.
Why don't you call back to see if you can get a better connection.
All right.
So let me go through this list here, this litany, and then we're going to talk to Susie Shannon from the Democratic National Committee, Dorothy Wright from the Santa Monica Democrats, and John Brakey from the campaign to get us decent voting machines. So here's how the Republicans are already stealing the 2018 election and intend to go through the 2020 election. And Susie, Dorothy, and John, you guys can add to this, as will Bob when he gets on. Okay, so first of all, let's start. We have the census. They are now trying to rig the U.S. census. They want to put in a clause about whether you're a citizen, which is ridiculous. It's all basically designed, and the whole Republican strategy is designed to disenfranchise as many potential Democrats as possible, and they do it basically by color, primarily blacks and Hispanics. That's the brunt of the Republican disenfranchise campaign. That's what got them the election in 2000 to put George Bush in the White House. It got them the election in 2004 to get Bush reelected over John Kerry. And a lot of it was done in 2016 to get Donald Trump in the White House. Disenfranchisement, first of all, by rigging the census. Secondly, by gerrymandering. In 2010, the Republicans basically took over many state houses and gerrymandered the districts, which gave them control of the Congress, at least the House of Representatives. The House of Representatives is totally gerrymandered. We have a majority of people in this country who voted for Democrats to be in the Congress, and yet you have a major majority of the Congress is Republican. We also have the what we're going to talk about with Bob Petraeus, which is the stripping of the voter rolls. Ohio has led the way on this, but the Republican secretaries of state and the county and precinct election boards, where they're controlled by Republicans, just go in there and strip people off, again, by race, primarily blacks, Hispanics. In some districts, also young people. Here in Ohio, for example, well, in Ohio, where I used to be, I'm actually in California. I had a little lapse there. In Ohio, they went at Kenyon College and at Oberlin College and stripped the voter rolls there. They're also getting rid of, as best they can, of early voting, Sunday voting, same-day voting registration. Maybe we can come up with some other things. But the point is to run through the litany here of the ways that the Republicans are rigging the election already and what the Democrats can do about it. So, Susie Shannon, since you're our official Democrat here, what, if anything, is the Democratic National Committee doing to counteract this assault on the right to vote?
So let's go, I guess, through the list. So first of all, the census not only has that citizenship question, but it's going to be vastly underfunded. And so anyone who is hard to reach, for instance, people who are homeless on the streets, people who live in rural communities, are going to be, it's questionable in terms of who is going to be counted in that census. So I do know that there will be pushback at a legislative level, at the national level, but there's also talk, particularly in California, where, as you know, the federal government and the state of California are not getting along. There's talk about backfilling the amount that the census will not be covering, so that we can be reaching into communities of color to make sure that people are counted, reaching our homeless population, which is fairly large in the state of California, and these sort of hard-to-count populations. So I do know that that's part of the budget discussion for the state of California. I think other states also are looking at that, so that we're not just letting the Trump administration kill our census, which, of course, then, decides how many representatives we have. We could actually lose a congressional district here in California if they don't count everyone and play games and underfund it. So that's one of the things. I would say about the Ohio situation and that ruling that there needs to be massive voter registration drives in that state so that people get back on the rolls. And I will say, this is not the first time that a government entity has used letters as a way to disenfranchise people. So for instance, for people who are on the Section 8 waiting list, if they became homeless, the housing authority would send them a letter. And if the letter came back, and clearly it's not going to get to someone who's living on the street, it's not going to get to someone living in their car. And if the letter came back, they took them off the waiting list, even if they were on for 5 years, and then just moved on. And so using letters as a way to disenfranchise people, particularly communities of color and low-income folks, has been a tactic for disenfranchisement and just denying people housing for years. And so it doesn't surprise me. The Supreme Court ruling surprises me, but it doesn't surprise me that this would be used as a tactic for disenfranchisement. And so obviously, it would be great to take over the state house. In the meantime, there need to be massive mobilizations to register people to you know, have them understand exactly what's going on, not just to check their registration, but just to re-register if they think there's any question that they might have been taken off the rolls.
Well, Susie, you're on the Democratic National Committee. Is the DNC going to do anything like what you just said?
I would hope so. So we have a committee that's designed specifically for this based on disenfranchisement. So I don't think any decisions have been made yet. But I know that I'm putting in to make sure that we're hiring staff there who are on the ground running these mobilization efforts, because if we don't do that, you know, we could lose. We could lose, you know, the presidency again.
Absolutely.
And I think there's so much at stake here that not doing that would just be crazy at this point.
Well, I hope people jump on it. Dorothy Reich, are you with us?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Okay. So, Dorothy Reich, you're with the Progressive Democrats of the Santa Monica Mountains. We had something happen here in L.A. in this particular election. It was quite disturbing. Do you want to talk about that? It actually happened to me. I've tried to vote here for the first time in California. I did register when I changed my address, and I went to the poll, and my name was not on the voter list. And
The phone wasn't on there either. So it looks like 118,000 people fell off the voting rolls. They didn't fall off so much as their names didn't get printed, and they're trying to say it's a programming error, a printing error. The Board of Supervisors had Dean Logan in and ranked him over the calls. He's a charming guy, you know. When you meet him, he's always got an answer. But there were questions, I might as well say it, there were questions when he was hired whether he was the most qualified of all the applicants that they had. I mean, according to the standards, the registrar recorder is supposed to be a college graduate. Dean Logan is not, just for example. And this is
well,
a huge
job. What happened? How do we know that 118,000 people did not get onto the? Well, what happened? Tell us what happened. 118,000 people who were registered to vote were not in the
book. People went to the polling places like you did, and their names weren't there. They were supposed to be getting provisional ballots. Of course, that ruling did not come down until later in the morning, so people who voted really early didn't get their provisional ballots. And they're supposed to be counted, and there's a way at lavote.net that you can check if your ballot was counted. But this is a huge snafu, and we're not getting any answers to what exactly happened. First, they said something about date of birth entries were the cause of it. Now they're saying it's a printing error. I don't know if people entered the dates of birth with too many digits and so the names then fell off. I don't know how that
that's
works.
It's unbelievable.
But
in this day, in this day and age, in a country that's put a person on the moon, that spends $1 trillion on missile defense and nuclear weapons.
Well, it's really scary.
And
L.A.
County
is all up in arms about
it. It's unbelievable.
Supposedly.
It's just unbelievable.
But,
and it really doesn't give you much faith in, and this is a Democratic county, for God's sakes. I mean, God knows if it happens here, it can happen in all the counties in the country that are controlled by Republicans, for God's sakes.
Well, I mean, this kind of thing happens in California. If you remember, in the primary, the instructions on the voter booklets were confusing. The fact that you had to ask for a quote-unquote crossover ballot was written in print that you couldn't even see unless you had a magnifying glass, and it was put in an obscure place where most people wouldn't see it anyway. So it was so God knows how many votes were lost, how many people were disenfranchised in that election. But
yep, unbelievable.
Now they have grandiose
all right, let's
plans
move on.
For a new election system.
Anything else
in
about
Los
this
Angeles? Thing? You know, they're going to have voting centers. They're going to eliminate most of the polling places. People are going to be able to vote over a 10-day period or something. I heard a whole long presentation by our friend Dean Logan. It sounds very exciting if people can figure it out and get to vote, but who knows? This is a whole new thing. Plus, I'm reading here on Brad's blog that a lot of the audio voting systems for disabled voters were not working properly. So those people didn't get to vote. So the whole LA voting system seems to be falling apart.
This is really disturbing, of course. I mean, we're on the brink of fascism in this country. Yeah, and the voting system is just, in this day and age, it's insane. Let's talk about the voting machines now. We got John Brakey with us. John, you've been on the show before, one of our great election protection activists. You actually have some good news and some legislation to talk about. So why don't you jump in and tell us what's happening with electronic voting machines.
Well, it's first off, I'm very sympathetic to the situation with the voter turnout, the blue wave not really being there like we thought it would be, and and just kind of wondering why. But going to what we were both going back and forth on the internet today is that Senator Ron Wyden out of Oregon, is submitting a bill, and the language in the bill is, I find, very exciting and very simply laid, that he wants to use, random audits to match ballots to ballot images, because the ballot images is what the machine counts, and they want to prove that the images are good, which is very logical, because those ballot images really could help us in the long run to prove to Americans that don't vote, which is in the presidential election, 107 million people. I mean, when Hitler won his first election in Germany, didn't he win with in a very low percentage? For example, Trump, if you look at the presidential election and you have 242 qualified or people who could vote, millions, Trump, 44% of the voters who didn't vote, 28% voted for Hillary, and 27% voted for Trump. He came in third place. But the big problem is a lot of Americans don't believe that elections are real, especially over the last couple of years, that they see on TV or in the media all the time that, the Russians did this or this or that, and when the reality is that a lot of American people rejected the neoliberal and the neoconservative who work for the same part of the machine, which is the corporatists. And realistically, both these parties made an agreement with the devil, and they will not allow people who are progressive to be able to get involved. If they do, they'll probably cut off the funding. I don't know why the Democratic Party has such a problem rejecting people who believe in justice and making things happen. And of course, we know that these voting machines. So getting back to it, this bill, is a way that we can have people believe that elections are real because they can see it. And that's got to be a goal. We have to have elections that are, one, transparent, two, trackable, and three, publicly verified. And that's the fight. Sadly, there's not going to be any legislation that's going to pass. There's a couple of bills out there. The first one that was induced in December only has five co-sponsors and hasn't even had a hearing yet over the last 6 months. And it's too close to an election. Nothing's going to pass unless it's somehow going to hurt us. And you can see that handwriting on the wall, because when the Trump Commission got together, they captured most of the databases, and voter suppression has been the oldest technique and will continually be huge in this election. And, I start in Ohio when I sued Ohio that out of the 15 counties that had ballot images, the counties that did not want to use the images and wanted to destroy them were the counties that had the largest populations of people of color. And that's sinful. It really is.
So you are promoting a machine where tell us the technique of voting. You vote on a paper ballot. The ballot is inserted into the machine. The machine takes basically a digital picture of the ballot. the ballot itself, the paper ballot is
number on
reserved.
It.
What's that?
It puts a unique number on the image, and if they put the inkjet back into the high-speed scanners, it would put a unique number on the ballot, marrying these two things together because they were built by for bankers to track documents. And if you needed to look at the original, here you go. And that's what must happen in elections. And right now, 45% of the country has these images, and by 2020, it will be 85% or more will have this. The old technology has gone. It's bye-bye. It was too expensive to run. It was called mark sense technology. You make a mark and it sensed it, left no evidence behind. The new system leaves evidence, and that evidence is a public record, and we should be able to download it by precinct and have our neighbors over, take our precinct, and plug our computer to our flat-screen TV, get some clickers, and lickety-click real quick. You'll know the results of any races that you're checking. That is what we have.
So basically,
to
let me run this by.
The American people, the elections are real.
So let me run this by because I want Susie Shannon to tell us if the DNC knows about this. These machines, which are from ES&S and other mainstream companies, you go to the polling place. You get a paper ballot. Now, the paper ballot, because it's computerized, the paper ballot can be printed in pretty much any of, 14 or 15 languages. My understanding is that in L.A., there are 14 different languages that you can vote in. So you get a printed ballot. You mark the printed ballot with a pencil. You take the printed ballot and you insert it into the machine. The machine reads the paper ballot, creating a digital image. It adds a number to the image and to the ballot. But this number cannot be traced to the person who counted the who cast the ballot, right? I mean, we still have secret voting. The paper ballot itself goes through the machine, and then it's in a collector, so it's kept. But the counting is done from the ballot image. And then if you have a problem, you can recount the ballot image, and you can also recount the paper ballot, and you can justify the paper ballot to the ballot image. Is that correct?
That's what we want, yes. But not, I don't know about L.A., but I'm talking about many, many counties all across the United States already have this system. L.A. has something that's a hybrid and very unique.
All right. So, Susie Shannon, do we have anything like this in L.A.? Or, Dorothy, do you know? Is this how we vote in L.A.? I mean, when I went to vote Tuesday, I got one of these damn punch cards. I hate those things. And I had to vote, and then since my name wasn't on the list, I had to vote provisionally. And I didn't see anything in my precinct resembling what John Brakey has described here. Susie and then Dorothy, what do we know about this?
So I used to be an election inspector. I'm not any longer. So I don't know if we're actually taking ballot images and counting them or not. In Los Angeles, because I really haven't looked into that.
Well, I will guarantee you where I voted in Valley Village, that was not the case. I voted on a punch card ballot.
Okay.
Really,
yeah, I haven't seen those in L.A. for a while, because usually we typically use Inkavote, but it's possible that for provisional ballots, which is what you were filling out, maybe they had a punch card instead. But that sounds really strange, because we've had Inkavote for a while, so I wonder what was going on there. Because that sounds even more strange to me. But I've never been a huge fan of absentee voting, just because the signatures can not match and they can throw it out. But I'm starting to become a believer because there's so much going on at our polling places, which doesn't necessarily affect these ballot images. But I just feel that There's so much that can go wrong on the day of the election with polling places closed and people's name not on the roster and that kind of thing, that I have to wonder, you know, if we're better off voting for the most part by absentee ballot. But I don't know about the images. And regardless, I think, you know, each state should be preserving these images. And you asked if the DNC knows. So I know that activists, including me and some other folks, were in discussions with the former executive director of the DNC. And I know that a lot of us were disappointed that they didn't join in some of the lawsuits to preserve these images, because it's really important that all of our election materials be preserved. And the Democratic Party, more than anyone, needs to really be helping out to make sure that voters are not disenfranchised, that there isn't anything that can happen, you know, in terms of a recount, in terms of ballots disappearing. And so these images, it's just really important that we're preserving them. And so, you know, I'm hoping the Democratic Party will step up to the plate. They haven't yet. But, you know, and I was disappointed they didn't sign on to these lawsuits. But, you know, this is going to be a huge problem. And, you know, we can't always wait till the year before a presidential election when we're looking at these things.
Dorothy Wright, do you know anything about?
As far as the voting in L.A., after you vote on the IncaVote card, it's put into a slot in a scanner, really. And the scanner counts the votes. That's why it kicks it back if you've marked too many boxes on any individual vote, and it lets you do it again. Actually, they would tell us when I was an election inspector that these boxes did not tally all the votes. They didn't count them, but in fact they did. If you pushed the button, they told you not to push. It would tell you the tally. But I don't know about whether it preserved images or not. I'm not aware that it had that ability.
Well, where I voted, everybody was voting on a punch card. I mean, it was just ridiculous.
Sure, it was a punch card that you think it looks like it's a punch card, but you make the mark on the ballot.
No, I had a thing that it was like a ticket punch, like you would see on a train conductor. You had to pick a box. There were like 150 circles, actually. Mm-hmm. You picked them based on, you know, they gave you a booklet telling you whose number was what. Then you take this little punch thing. You punched out the corresponding circle next to the number. And then I assume and I had a provision, as I said, but I think that's how everybody was voting.
But it actually made a hole in the ballot.
Yes.
Very strange.
I mean, is that really?
I'm also being told that they are going to be calling any voter whose signature does not match the signature on their voter registration does not match the signature on their envelope. They're going to actually be calling people whose votes would be discarded because of that and giving them the opportunity, to explain themselves. But they are going to be calling.
I
did get that information from Henry Stern.
Well, still, though, I mean, I felt like it was in the 1920s doing this ridiculous punch card ballot, and my name wasn't on the voter roll. I mean, I felt like, you know, and there were no black people voting in this precinct, so I guess I was the designated black person. John Brakey, how are these machines being spread? The machine that you want to use, the SNS, and I guess there are others who do have similar powers, how much do they cost, and how are they being spread?
Well, now I heard.
Well,
all right. Let me just say this.
Go ahead, Dorothy. What were you saying,
Dorothy?
The supervisor
now authorized, I think, a huge amount of money, $82 million, or maybe it's billion, I don't know, $82 million to get touchscreen voting machines here that will have a paper ballot that will generate a paper ballot.
No, they can't be touchscreen. You can't let them have touchscreen.
I'm just warning you all. That's what it looks like, was decided at the Board of Supervisors. So we need to get on that.
We got to jump on that. We cannot allow touchscreen voting machines. You cannot have
these here.
John, go ahead. John, break it.
Well, I just say that what L.A., from what I understand, what little I know, it is a very unique system, custom built for themselves, okay? And it is a DRE, okay, that will produce a hard copy paper ballot that then slips into an optical scanner. That's what I've been told. And it will make a digital image. The only problem with it is that digital images made by computers, every mark will be exactly the same. And you need to have hand-marked paper ballots because they're unique. But if you have a machine make it, that means it's going to be easy to forge. And that's the problem, at the least. Now, of course, L.A. is a very unique county. And like you, I don't know how many different kind of languages. I think you said 14. Well, these DREs will print that thing out in that language and tell you in that language. And that's their intent. I hope this does not happen all over the country. I know that we fought these machines in Georgia because these type DREs, as ESNS does have, it's called the express vote. And you vote on the machine, it prints a ballot, and then it prints it out. But the bad thing is when it slips into the optical scanners, once it's a machine-marked ballot, and two, it doesn't even read the machine marks. It reads a secret barcode that nobody can read, okay? So you can see a mark here by the machine saying, yep, that's the right place, but you don't know if the barcode's recording something different. And that is a severe problem, and we're fighting these machines nationally to stop it from happening. Realistically, the best way to go is hand-marked paper ballots. If you have multiple languages, put a printer in there that is called printer on demand. And if somebody comes in and wants a Korean ballot, print them a Korean ballot that they go ahead and hand mark, and it goes into a digital scanner, not an optical. An optical is, you know, only read by LED light. A digital takes a picture of both sides and makes sure they marry each other, and we have something that's auditable. And that's the whole purpose, that elections are transparent,
what they're anticipating,
publicly verified.
This is all very high-tech. What they're anticipating is that anybody in L.A. County will be able to go to any voting center, and they're going to have them all over the city, and they're going to have pop-up ones in certain neighborhoods that are smaller populations. But anybody can go and vote and get the correct ballot for their address at any of these voting stations. So say that you work
in downtown
LA,
but you
live in Valencia. You want to vote in downtown LA, you can go to a voting center and you can put in your address and it's going to give you the ballot for your precinct. And
it's not going to give you a ballot. It's going to give you a machine.
Whatever. It's going to allow you to vote for your precinct. I'm not saying I agree with this. I'm just telling you what they're contemplating here. This is in the plans, and I don't know if they can do that so that it would generate an actual ballot for everybody's precinct. Probably they could if we could get them to do that. But this is what they're doing. They're making it possible for people to vote. If you live in LA County, you will be able to vote at any voting station that you pass by. If you want to vote where you work, you want to vote where you live, you want to vote where your kid lives, as long as you put your address in, you're going to get the races in your precinct, in your life.
Okay.
But what I'm saying, you don't have to do that on a DRE. You could have exactly the system that you described, and when you walk in, you give your information, and they print a ballot that you hand mark that goes into one optical digital scanner versus having thousands and thousands of these $6,000 pencils.
We need to get a meeting with Dean Logan and discuss it with him, because that's what we need to request.
Versus a digital a printer.
Okay, so let's Dorothy and Susie, you're in L.A. We do need to have a meeting. We'll get Judy Alter. We do need to have a meeting with the election board and find out what kind of machines they're going to do. Because John is right. You do not want to enter your vote on a touch screen. We want to enter our votes on a paper ballot. The paper ballot then can go into the machine. It, as John says, if you show up, say they're going to go to voter centers as opposed to precincts, if they're going to keep them open for 10 days, that's a reasonable trade-off. That'd be fine with me. Not quite as convenient geographically, but in time frame, if they can offer much greater access over the week or 10 days prior to the election, that's worth it. But we do not want to go. What we do want to do is go in there, give the address, sign in, and get them to print on demand a paper ballot that then goes into a scanner, a digital scanner, that preserves, that puts a number on the ballot, puts a number on the image, and then counts the visual image and retains the paper ballot. We do not want to be voting on a touch screen. I think that's really important.
It's going to start in 2020, so we got to get going because they've already probably ordered the machines.
Right. Bob Petrakis, have you joined us? Bob, are you with us yet?
Yeah. Can you hear me, Harvey?
Yes, you're good. Okay, we're joined by Bob Petrakis, who actually is in Columbus, Ohio. And I want to go in now, Susie, Dorothy, and John, and our listeners, to the details of this horrendous Supreme Court decision that just came down that will give secretaries of state tremendous leeway to strip people from the voter rolls. And Bob and I have a piece at Reader Supported News about this, if you want to go read it. Hopefully PRN will print it as well, publish it. And it explains this terrible 5-4 decision. Bob, can you describe what the Supreme Court has now done to voting rights in this country?
Well, really, it's a victory for states' rights. At the crux of the decision is that no real mention that voting rights is a constitutional right. And there's also no analysis as to why you would do such a thing. That's completely missing from the narrative. For example, in a state that uses computerized voting rolls, where you have to show ID to vote, why would you deregister anyone short of, if they died or moved away? And those records are actually readily available. Even county's recorder's office will tell you who died. So really, it's massive voter suppression. You haven't voted in a primary, in a federal election, and in a general election over a two-year period, they'll begin to send you cards. If you then don't return those cards, you can be purged. And, of course, the purges are all in the large urban centers. So it's a decision that goes in the exact opposite direction of the European Union, which is part of their constitution, mandates that government officials shall register their citizens to vote.
So the essence of this decision, if you'll describe what John Huston did, the Secretary of State, and how many people have actually been stripped in Ohio as a result of this, and what you think the impact of this decision will be.
Well, this has been an ongoing trend, Harvey, that you and I have followed since the 2004 election. In 2003, which is an odd number year, these purges are supposed to occur in an odd number year, not in a presidential election year. So in 2004, they stripped 305,000 voters from essentially three cities, the inner city of Toledo, massively in Cleveland, and the inner city in Cincinnati. And they weren't supposed to, under Ohio law, do this. And that's what cost John Kerry the 2004 election, the stripping of the voter rolls. In 2008, they ended up with about 1.25 million voters stripped from the voting rolls. But many of them were re-signed up by Acorn, which is now pretty much defunct, which went door-to-door, and by the Obama campaign. In 2012, in the run-up to the 2012 election, between 08 and 12, they stripped, Houston stripped 1.1 million voters. And the last time around, it was over a million voters, about a million 32. And again, all of these are overwhelmingly concentrated in the urban areas. Studies that we've done at the Free Press through the Institute, with very little effort, we found if you strip a million voters, 285,000 of them are living at the exact same address. And a overall majority, more than half a million of them, are eligible to vote because they live in the same county. All they need to do is go to the Board of Election on election day. So essentially, they're deregistering voters in a state that requires ID and can easily accommodate the voter's name. They could even put inactive and take an extra long look at their ID, although I wouldn't recommend it. But they have that right. Why, when you have to show ID to show where you live, why would they take you off the voters' rolls because you didn't vote in a couple federal elections? And in many cases, people have voted in local elections, Harvey.
Wow. So they strip you even if you voted in a local election?
Yes. Yeah, there's numerous cases we ran across when we first began to look at this in 04. A couple that had lived in the same house for 41 years and had voted in the last local election got thrown off for not voting in federal elections.
So if you've been thrown off the voter rolls,
is valid. You know, the Congress passed this law, and it's up to the Secretary of State. And you have these incredibly wide standards. It's not being regarded as a constitutional right. You leave it up to these individual, often biased and prejudiced Secretary of State.
So if you have voted in a recent local election, but not the federal,
yes,
this Supreme Court decision allows the Secretary of State to strip you off the voter roll?
The Secretary of State has the discretion. The law referenced having not voted in two federal election cycles. Now, that was commonly understood before J. Kenneth Blackwell, the former Secretary of State and co-chair of the Bush-Cheney Reelection Committee in Ohio in 2004. That was commonly understood to mean 8 years. The election cycles were thought of as a presidential election and a congressional midterm election. So it used to be 8 years. Houston now has the full authority to throw people off after 6 years. And it looks like the authority, you know, to throw people off after a few elections if he sends them enough cards and they don't return them. So part of Houston was targeting people for not voting in federal elections, even if they had voted in local elections. But the real target was they were black or poor, minorities, Hispanics that lived in urban areas, intended to vote overwhelmingly Democratic.
Susie Shannon pointed out at the beginning that the if you're required to return a postcard based on a mailing from the state, if you're homeless or on Section 8 housing, you're never going to get the mailing.
Right, and there's a Supreme Court case on point that says if you're homeless and have a designated spot that you can describe on a red couch under viaduct on I-71 near Broad Street, you have a right to vote. But you're not going to get this, again, you're not going to get the mailing from the Secretary of State, and that's going to be used to purge you. So the homeless, of course, would be the most vulnerable, not only as homeless, but the most vulnerable to vultures like John Houston.
And I read an article that said that the mailers are specifically designed to be thrown away, that there are no pictures.
I've seen the packages, it's
something that looks like junk mail.
They don't really stand out as anything of importance.
Right.
So you're right. Gorsuch is saying basically that the design of the mailer would incline you to throw it away with the rest of your junk. Is that right, Dorothy?
Sorry, guys.
Oh, I hear dogs. So basically, that's not surprising. I did not see in the accounts of the Supreme Court decision, Bob, any discussion of the impact on homeless people. Did this actually come up in front of the justices?
The question of homeless voting?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, there's a longstanding case on record that goes back as precedent that said the homeless have a right to vote if they can clearly describe where they stay as homeless.
Right. But so this is a complete disenfranchisement of people who don't have housing or who are couch surfing, living on the street. And this is a tactic, like I said earlier, that's been used for decades. And it's a way to also deny people housing because the housing authority will send a letter that basically says your appointment for Section 8 is coming up. And if you live on the street or you live in your car and you don't receive that letter and they don't hear back from you, then they just purge you from the list, even if you've been on it for 5 years. So this is standard. I mean, there's two ways to oppress low-income folks. One is you send them a letter, you know, basically forcing them to respond. Or having that letter come back, or you put requirements on people to have to reapply for services every 3 or 4 months. I mean, we all know sort of how this works. And this is just a classic attempt to oppress low-income folks, people of color, people who are homeless. And if they're not, you know, constantly burdened with re-registering, and if we don't get these mobilization programs moving to get people re-registered and to explain to them, even though you think you're registered, you may not be, then, you know, we're not going to win. We're just not going to win. You know, low-income folks are not going to win. They're never going to be heard because this is just going to keep going on and on. And if the Democratic Party doesn't step up and do something, it's just going to be a domino effect in every single one of these states.
Wow.
And Harvey, you know yourself, you know, they were worried about you voting at that address you'd been at forever.
Well, Bob, you'll be glad to know it's deja vu all over again. A lot of what we did in Ohio started when they wouldn't give me an absentee ballot, even though I'd lived in the same house for more than 20 years. And now here in California, when I changed my address, I automatically registered to vote, and I went in to vote Tuesday, and my name was not on the list, and they gave me one of these provisional ballots, and everybody there was voting on these ridiculous punch cards, you know, back to hanging chads. It was unbelievable.
I'm thinking you're part of cross-check as one of those progressive Jewish types.
You know, somebody's got to tell Kris Kobach that I'm actually white, although, you know, I'm a Democrat, and leaning Democrat or green, so they don't want me to vote anyway. We're running out of time here. Susie Shannon, how do people get a hold of you?
I can be found on the www.cadem.org site under DNC members, or they can just Google my name, Susie Shannon, email. I'm at Susie Ann, A-N-N-E, Shannon, at gmail.com.
Dorothy Reich, how do people get a hold of you?
They can go to Dorothy Reich at P, like in Progressive, D like in Democrat, S like in Santa, M like in Monica, M like in Mountain.org, and they can email me there.
Progressive Democrats of Santa Monica. Dorothy. Okay, John Brakey?
Yeah, best way to get hold of me is johnbrakey@gmail.com, and my site is www.auditelectionsusa.org. Thank you for having me on, and good to be with everybody.
All right, Bob Petrakis.
Well, people can check out our writings, Harvey, at freepress.org, but if they want to get a hold of me, robertfetrakis@gmail.com. Send me an email.
All right, so Bob, you were on last. Let's start with you. How serious is this vote stripping situation? Do the Democrats actually have a chance in 2018? Forget about the blue wave.
Well, in Ohio, luckily, because of the special election in the 12th district, it's actually too late legally to purge the voting rolls in the state of Ohio. But on the flip side of that, the Democrats that are running so hard to the center right, you know, I'm afraid there's going to be a huge traffic jam. Someone's going to be hurt. They're going to butt heads. You know, they're running, the Democrat in the 12th is running against Nancy Pelosi. And Rich Cordray is kind of running as the new John Kasich. So there's not a whole lot of progressive debate going on. But there's a chance to win for many of these centrists because they can't purge the vote because of this special election is within 90 days. So Houston has announced that he's not going to purge the votes in Ohio in 2018.
And there is also a gerrymandering bill on the ballot. Is that correct?
Not on the ballot, but a suit has been filed, and there's a ballot initiative in place. I don't see how they'll get enough numbers by this fall, but there is a suit challenging the districts.
John Brakey, how are we going to do on the machines this time?
Well, I think that I just think elections are like making concrete, and when you want to steel, you got to make sure you have the right aggregate, the right sand, the right water, the chemical. They have a system built that if they steal a little here, steal a little bit there, and they manipulate things and use gerrymandering, we're in big trouble. I don't see the blue wave. Ohio proved that to me. I was shocked when 150 or 125,000 more Republicans came out than Democrats to vote. I'm afraid that if we don't prove to people that elections are real, they're going to stay home. And it really scares me. And that's why we have to fight to prove that we can make them verified, which we can. So that's the fight to me.
Dorothy Reich?
Yeah, that's part of the reason the Democratic Party doesn't like to make a whole issue of this, because they're afraid people won't come out to vote at all. They'll just be discouraged. And it's a problem. You're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. So we have a major, you know, problem on our hands, and it's really a hard one to solve.
All right, well, let's make a date, you and me and Susie and Judy Alter and whoever else, to meet with the election guy here in L.A. County so we can get this thing straightened out about what kind of machines they're going to put in. We do not want direct entry machines. Susie Shannon, you get the last word from the Democratic National Committee.
So I will just say we are not going to win unless we deal with these issues. You know, they're taking our voters off the rolls. They're oppressing our voters. And it's just going to require really maybe even a national campaign just telling people to either check that they are registered if they know how to do that, or just go re-register. I mean, it's just getting to the point now where it might just be easier to have a campaign where people just re-register at this point. Because they're just knocking so many people off the rolls.
So, Susie, as our representative on the Democratic National Committee, I think you're the only progressive left. They purged everybody else. I think you need to get the DNC to do exactly what you said. There needs to be a national campaign to get everybody to re-register. I mean, I'll go re-register.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't know what else to do because there's so much going wrong. I mean, even in our Democratic counties, like you've seen, there's just so much going wrong that I just don't see how else you beat this back without going into like huge explanations. Just re-register, and it also updates people's signatures, so it's actually not a bad idea.
And it gets them more likely to come out to vote. So
yes.
Let's see if we can finally get the Democratic Party to do something in the interest of actual democracy. Maybe Hillary, Kerry, and Gore can each put in a few $100 million from their personal fortunes, having blown the elections that they ran in, and get stuck us with George Bush and Donald Trump. Maybe they'll be ashamed into doing something about this. All right, this has been an incredibly informative hour. I want to thank you all for being with us, and I do want to put in here that people should check out this article that Bob Petraeus and I have written about the Supreme Court decision. And it really, I think the only antidote is what Susie has said, which is there needs to be a national registration campaign. It needs to happen now. I think the Democratic Party is going to have to finally get off its behind and do this. And it will also focus people's attention and at least, you know, find a way around this stripping of the voter rolls. I don't really see any other way. I mean, we lost Acorn, but there are people out there who do work on voter registration who will do this. It's going to have to be like Mississippi Freedom Summer again, all over, back from 1964, where we just have to revive the electorate. And, you know, if we are stuck with Donald Trump for another 2 years, where he has a Republican House and a Republican Senate, I don't know if there's anything going to be left of this country, let alone the world. I mean, we are looking at real serious hardcore fascism here. And Susie, I think you've got it right. Everybody here has got it right. We have got to make sure we've got the right voting machines, and we got to register Adam? People. Thank you, guys, in New York. We'll see you next week. Did we Solartopia. From what we conceived.
Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.